Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we've got another guest for you. And our guest believes that much of the waste in our landfills, including a lot of single-use plastic, could be converted into renewable energy. Sort of a circular and sustainable bioeconomy, I think is how she puts it. And the she is Erica Majumder, who is an assistant professor of bacteriology at UW-Madison. Her lab in the Department of Bacteriology is concerned with the mechanisms and the consequences of microbes on environmental and human health. And as we talk with her about some really cool research, she's got a number of projects going, and I want to try and touch on all of them. And we're going to start with some work that she's done with landfills, but you may have questions about bioplastics and microplastics, or those plastics that we call them single use. And that means that they get used once and they get thrown away. And she's trying to figure out ways that we can come up with a different kind of one-time plastic that can also be eaten up by microbes. Let's put it that way. As we talk with her, please do join in. What questions do you have? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Erica, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you work in the area called landfill microbiology, and it's kind of a new field, isn't it?
Relatively. I think it's gained new traction recently. There was a lot of good work in the 70s and 80s, but there hasn't been very much recently. But we've been reinvigorated to get back into this space.
Well, it involves studying microbes that are maybe deep in the bowels of landfills. What are you hoping to learn?
Sure. Well, a landfill is all about decomposition, and that's all done by microbes. And so we want to learn more about which microbes are there and what they're doing so that we can better control the degradation rates, maybe produce renewable energy, get rid of some of the contaminants, make space. Landfills are often filling up, and we don't want to use a lot of extra land for landfills. So there's incentives to have landfills work more efficiently as well.
And you and your grad students, a whole team of students, are doing something called bioprospecting at the Dane County landfill. And so bioprospecting, is that what you just described?
Kind of. We like to put a lot of different titles on things as the words get popular over time. But yeah, bioprospecting is this idea that in a particular environment where there are chemical constraints on the system, or a unique environment, you could call it, that the microbes that live there probably have adapted to have unique abilities that match that environment. And if we're looking for a microorganism that could help us do a particular function, we go look in environments that are chemically similar. So a landfill is kind of one of the craziest environments I've ever worked in. It's everything's in there. And so we were looking for microbes that might have some unique chemistries with degrading plastics or degrading some of the other wastes that are in a landfill that we don't see in a natural environment.
Yeah, it's really interesting. What I was reading the story about you and your work a bit, I thought back to a book Merlin Sheldrake wrote. It was titled Entangled Life. And in that book, he describes in one place where it involves some research in Mexico where I think 15% of or 10% of the landfill consisted of dirty diapers. And they came up with a white rot fungi that could eliminate 85, would love diapers, and produced actual edible mushrooms of a sort but reduce the extent of it by about 85% of the mass. And that's kind of what you're doing, we're looking to do anyway.
Yeah, in a way, definitely. There's a lot of great scientists who are coming up with innovative waste solutions like that, where we're using these natural processes that microorganisms have, which include fungi and archaea and bacteria and even viruses, how they all contribute to these processes. And so it's kind of looking at waste as food for the microorganisms and having those microorganisms produce something that's useful to us, whether that, like the example you just gave, where it's edible mushrooms or could be useful products, all kinds of different things.
Yeah. Well, the Dane County landfill, I have to tell you a little story about that. I did not like the Dane County landfill, where the location where it went in, because when I was a teenager, for a couple of years, I lived on the Rodefeld farm. And so I planted with a couple of brothers, Jerry and Dick Rodefeld, we planted about 1,000 trees in that property. I think I shot the first goose I ever shot hunting as a teenager. I shot in the little pond in the back of that farm. But then it went to be it was sold to be a landfill, which I deeply didn't like at the time, because I thought, well, all the trees are now gone and everything. So, but I guess it has to go somewhere.
Yeah, landfills do have to go somewhere. And I think one thing that's really interesting about the Dane County landfill is that they do a lot to be holistic with it. So the closed part of the landfill, they actually use as a prairie seeding grounds. So they'll mm-hmm. seed native grasses to restore those on the closed part of the landfill. So they do try to use the space effectively.
And I'm a golfer, too, and now the other part of the landfill is going to go on part of the golf course that I play on all the time.
I did hear that, yes, that there were some golfers that weren't thrilled about the new location. But yeah, putting a landfill in different places, you know, landfills are very essential to, you know, keeping, like, a healthy environment, but nobody wants the landfill, you know, in different places. So it's always a tricky discussion of where that goes.
Not my backyard kind of thing.
Exactly.
Well, here you are. Somebody, I probably was a reporter, or maybe not, coined the phrase for you as the landfill lady. What do you what do you think about that?
I've said before, I'm mostly okay with it. At first, I thought it was a little bit of like a Sesame Street Oscar the Grouch kind of reference. And I was like, hopefully it's not that. But then I was informed, I haven't seen Sesame Street in a while. I'm not. I was informed that Oscar recycles now and that he's no longer grouchy. So I needed to update my references there. But it's kind of nice to be associated with, you know, what you research and things like that. But the exact moniker, I don't know if I like it, but it was, I didn't realize they were going to use that for the title of one of the articles about me, but it's nice to be recognized, I guess, for what you do.
Well, let's talk about plastics for a minute here, because if you went to the Dane County landfill or any other landfill, you're going to find, you found a lot of plastic that hadn't degraded an inch, but I mean about 20%?
Yeah, that's right. If you look at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources puts out waste audit reports of landfills across the state every year, those are all publicly available. And Wisconsin landfills on average are about 19 to 20% plastic.
And I think there was a little story you told about digging something. I mean, plastic you can dig up that was 30 years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Parts of the landfill are about as old as I am, or a little younger. And yeah, there were plastics that I recognized from my childhood that were easily recognizable with
Hostess Twinkies
a brownie package. Yeah, specifically was one of them, and some face creams that I recognized from when I was a teenager. And, you know, the blue of the packaging was still just immediately recognizable.
So wow. And so by the way, as well, we might also say that Wisconsin has a pretty big plastics industry
yes.
in the state, right? How big is it?
I should know those numbers. I don't.
It was over $2 billion.
Yes, it's very significant, which I was not aware of until I started working in this space. But yeah, it's a major industry here in Wisconsin.
And I'm told that about 45,000 people are working in the plastics industry in our state. So it's a big deal here in Wisconsin. So we can come up with ways to make better plastic.
Yeah, I'd be very excited about that. and I think also that's the way of the future. And the plastics companies in Wisconsin have been leaders and innovators for a long time. And so polymers are always changing in composition. As we've got new polymers over the decades, they've changed. What we use in our plastics change. And so I'm optimistic that plastics of the future will include a lot of these biodegradable solutions as well.
Fran in Madison has a comment or question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Fran.
Hi. I observe many times when we're driving that the cement companies actually have grinders for concrete that they recycle. Why cannot be used to recycle, grind it down to as far, far as you can for all this garbage? I don't understand why the trucks dump loads and loads of it, and it can't be reduced to at least 50% of its volume by putting it through some heavy grinders. I mean, if they can grind cement for reuse, why can't we grind up all this
plastic
and cardboard? I mean, it's unbelievable when you go to that lab that circulates around. It's called Junk Lab or something.
The Trash Lab, yeah.
The stuff that actually goes in the garbage is just absolutely disgusting.
All right. Well, go ahead, Erica. Comment away.
Sure, yeah. There's a couple of perspectives you could take there. I like that you're thinking about reuse for materials and how we might be able to replace new materials with what we already have. On the grinding question, so the landfills here, when the trucks dump things, there's a whole process of using these giant bulldozers that actually have metal wheels instead of rubber wheels, and they compact the trash, and there's a very specific way of compacting the trash, and so they're able to do that without grinding. Grinding consumes a lot of energy, so when we're looking at sustainability solutions, it's always this trade-off between how much energy and cost and the benefit to that. So for materials that go into landfills, the compaction that they do is probably more efficient in terms of than grinding. But I do like your question because that brings up a lot of things about waste diversion and what wastes go into landfills and how we can use those materials. So our local landfills here in Dane County, they do divert a lot of waste, like the construction and demolition waste diversion, the tire waste diversion. So they collect all of those materials separately and they reuse them and recycle them like you've seen with the grinding, which is great. And I wish we could do that more with plastics. There are some examples that I've heard about at some Wisconsin innovation things that I've attended where for road construction, they've been taking waste plastics and condensing them into large blocks and putting them under roads instead of extra gravel or dirt, which is more which is great that they're using these waste plastics in that way. And so, yeah, I'd love to see more innovation on that front.
For sure. And Dan and Brilliant, we'll get to you in just a minute, but we're taking a look at some research being done by Erica Majumder, who is our guest today, as she talks about her research, a little different than what we just talked about, because she's looking at bioplastics, which are a different thing kind of entirely from the petroleum-based plastics that currently go into these plastics that kind of live forever. And we'll talk about that. And Dan and Brilliant, we'll get to you in just a minute. But a quick reminder, you're listening to WPR News, and I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking with Erica Majumder, who's an assistant professor of bacteriology at the UW-Madison's Department of Bacteriology, doing some research in landfills. and especially zeroing in on plastics today. And I hope you'll join in. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. And let's go to Dan and Brilliant. Dan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just tuning in. I'm actually a garbage man that frequents landfills pretty frequently. I'm on route right now, actually. And, yeah, these landfills are way more than just places where we dump our trash. And it's amazing to see the work that goes into these landfills and the science and research that's done even after the landfill is completely closed and all the operational side of things packs up. Scientists stay for decades after doing the work that you do. It's just, and it's such a great place for biodiversity too. Like one of the landfills I used to dump at when I worked on the other side of the state was a home for at least a dozen bald eagles.
Yeah.
And they never left. So it's incredible
pretty
to see the difference in biodiversity and what animals are attracted to this
area. Yeah, Dan, thanks a lot for calling. Just a comment on that, Erica.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the work that you do and for listening and calling in and your perspective on it. It's true. When I started working in the landfill, just thinking about the microbiology, I had no idea about all of the other infrastructure and really actually the incredible work and resource that a landfill is for a city and a locality. So, yeah. Thank you. And yes, the eagles are amazing. I also did not expect to see a lot of wildlife at a landfill. And yeah, the eagle watching at landfills is fantastic.
And seagulls.
Yes.
They come from everywhere.
The seagulls too. Yeah, I visited a landfill in North Carolina and they had a bunch of eagles there too. And I did not expect that. So,
thanks, Dan. I appreciate the call. Tom in northern Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I was listening in. I've got a couple of opinions. I was in the plastics industry for a good 40 years. I'm retired. I retired like 9 years ago, so I'm sure things have caught up a little bit. But I was pretty involved in recycling and things like that. And one of the problems, I think the biggest problem is there's no streams out there. The streams to get rid of the plastics, I used to feel the same way. I mean, we were fortunate in the sense that we were doing food-grade plastic, and so our rejected plastic, you know, was, you know, minute little particles of contamination stuff, so they could take that plastic and easily make something else out of it. So we had a stream for our waste. But the biggest problem is that people just, there's not enough of industry for recycling and getting the streams going and separating your plastics. Europe is way far ahead of us than in that regard. They've been recycling for a long time. They are probably making more things out of their products, but we have to come up with ways. You know, we did some experimenting with trying to get plastics to degrade. You know, guys would take them home and bury them in their garden for a year and stuff and dig them up, and yeah, they weren't much different. You know, it's a hard thing to do, and I don't know how much has progressed in the last 9 years, but to me the more important thing seems to be, let's take the plastic we already have and find uses for it in recycling. And it was always crazy that when you would recycle, things would be so much more expensive. It's kind of like, well, geez, the main portion of the product that you need, you're getting, you know, you're almost getting for free. Why is this so expensive? But I know the process can be expensive.
And, you know, that's what you're working on in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Erica.
Yeah. Thank you for your comment and your perspective. I completely agree. I think there's an abundance of material available, and it's disappointing to me that we don't capitalize on all of that material that's available. And sometimes, as you were alluding to, even when there is a feasible chemical or engineering solution, sometimes the economics prevents us from using that, and then it just ends up in a landfill, which I agree is a shame. So I have recently, there like in the last few years, I've seen more of an emphasis on people starting to get creative about the different ways to use plastics. And I mean, plastics are a super useful material. That's why we use them all the time. They're very practical. And I think there's a lot of creative uses for how we could recycle and reuse the plastic material that's out there.
And now what you're looking at, though, is the creation of, well, you would like to see plastics made from organic material.
Yeah, ideally. So I would say both ways. So existing plastic waste or, but my lab's done a little bit of that. We've done some waste PET or polyethylene thiopallate, like water bottle kind of plastic conversion. But we've done a lot of work on taking the leftovers from food production. So we don't want to mess with the like the crops or the part of the crops that go to food, but there's all of that plant that gets left over, or there's all the animal waste that gets left over, or as those raw materials become the part of the food that we eat, there's other waste streams that come off of that. And so we've been trying to use all of that carbon and feed it to our microbes and produce biodegradable plastic polymers.
And the problem has been with a biodegradable polymers is that they're not as rigid, or they're I think the petroleum based are sturdier. Is that, am I right on that or not?
It depends on the polymer. So for a lot of the bioplastics, the main type of polymer is called a class called polyhydroxyalkanoates, or PHAs for short. And the main one that's produced commercially right now, it's called PHB. And it's a good replacement for polypropylene, but it can be a little brittle. And so it has very limited applications because it can be so brittle. So you can't do it for anything flexible like food packaging or things like that. So petroleum-based polymers have this wider range of mechanical properties that can be used. And so we try to, we've been actually sourcing some different types of waste streams from the dairy industry to try to make our bioplastic polymers be more flexible by incorporating some of the molecules that are in dairy waste.
Yeah, whey, I think, or a part of whey.
Whey is one of them, but specifically the acid whey we've been using, but you can also use sweet whey. And one of the great things about moving to Wisconsin is I've learned so much about dairy processing as well. And, so sometimes we've been even trying with different streams like permeates and buttercream separated whey and all these different kinds of things that I didn't know existed. But
But using them as a way to make this new product?
Yeah, exactly. So these would be like waste streams for the companies, or co-products or residues is typically what we call them, not waste streams. They are great food for our microorganisms, but less good food for people or animals. We feed them these molecules and our bacteria produce polymers from those molecules.
Mike in Madison has something that relates to just what you said. Mike, let's go there. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering, so as we head into all these plastic cars now, and especially the electric cars that are like 80% plastic and going to fill up our landfills, quadruple the amount in the next 20 years, my question is there specific types of plastic that this bacteria prefers to eat? Any of our like nylons or of the poly blends? I know there's a couple different bacteria that around the world that I've read about that are eating up these plastics, but they never say what they never get to too much technical data on what are the plastics are they eating? Are they prefer, you know, Lycra, nylon, the infinite number of plastics we have in the planet now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That brings up a lot of issues with plastic degradation. So yeah, plastics are a huge chemical. There's so many different types of plastics, many different polymers. They can be in blends, they can be in layered packaging. So it's a very challenging degradation as well as chemical recycling problem. a lot of times they don't say which plastics the microbes are eating because sometimes they don't know, or they maybe don't want to admit that when plastics get formulated, it's not just the polymer. There are these other small molecules that get mixed into the blend that becomes the plastic to give it the correct properties, and we call these other molecules additives. And what we found in our research and from the microorganisms in the Dane County landfill is that they're dominantly consuming these additives that are in the plastics, and they're not really eating the polymer. That can be tricky for a couple of reasons, but there are some microbes that can eat particular polymers. Microbes have been pretty good at eating PET, or the polyethylene terephthalate, from water bottles is the most common use of that. And they're pretty good at eating things that are like polyester based, so things that are labeled as biodegradable or home compostable plastics would be made out of polyesters. Microbes are less good at eating things like nylon or olefins, which would be like polyethylene and polypropylene, that have carbon-carbon linkages in the polymer. Sorry, I'm a chemist. I went down that route, but
that's all right. That's all right. Mike, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Again, I was thinking about some research. You know, these organisms can learn how to like something and to use it, and it sometimes takes a while. And I remember some research. A guy was, for some reason, decided that with the millions and billions of cigarette butts and filters, he taught... Well, he got working with microbes and found some that just loved them and ate them up.
Yeah.
But it took a while. It took a week or a couple of weeks for them to sort of warm up to the idea of eating them. But once they did, they just were ravenous.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the cigarette butts, I think it's actually a similar one to the diaper. It's the same microbe as the diaper example that you gave. But microbes can learn how to do these things. And that was one of the reasons we were looking in the landfill, is because there's a time element where the microbes have that time to learn how to do something. So.
Very cool. David in northern Wisconsin will give you a chance. Hi, David.
Hi. Hello. I called because it was several years ago, maybe two or three, something like that, where I saw a video on the Internet, or else it was an article that I read, where somebody had an invention where he returned the plastic to its original oil composition. And it was something like in an African village, and then they were using that the product there for their utilitarian uses in that area. And I was wondering if the lady, I don't know her name, I just tuned in later, knew anything about it. And I've always wondered for these several years, ever since I discovered or learned about that, if we can so easily, because it wasn't a very complex process going on there, if we can so easily turn the plastics back into original composition oil, petroleum that it was made out of, why don't we do that?
Erica, what do you think?
Good question. I'm not familiar with that particular example, but it sounds fascinating. There's even here at UW-Madison, there's a whole center. The acronym is CUP, for chemical upcycling of waste plastics. And so we do think a lot about that. And it would be great to have plastics that we could convert back into their oils or use. My guess is that would have been a very particular type of plastic that they were using, but I'm not familiar with the process. But 100% agree, we should do more of that.
David, thank you. Alex in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Erica. Thank you for this conversation. It's fascinating. The past 10 or 15 years, I've been hearing not just about microbes, but also fungi. Came in late to the conversation here, but I'm very curious on where that direction is going with using different mushrooms and mycelium, and if there's any benefits for using bacteria versus a fungus like oyster mushrooms and other types of mushrooms that I have heard to break down different types of polymers, but also styrofoam as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, thank you. We think a lot about this, actually. So in our research and others from around the world, what we've been seen is that if you want to fully break down a plastic, that you would need multiple types of microorganisms working together as a community or functional guilds, if you wanted to use labor analogies. And fungi are a huge part of that. Fungi are really good at breaking down bigger structures. And so bacteria are specialists in small molecule metabolism, and fungi are much better at breaking down larger structures. And so we kind of envision a scenario where the fungi would be breaking the plastics down into small enough pieces or releasing the smaller molecules. Fungi are much better at depolymerization, particularly for big intact plastics, because those are big plastics are too big to go inside of a bacteria. And so that means any of that breaking down part, at least initially, would have to happen outside of the cell, which is a very challenging problem for a bacteria. But fungi are much better at that. Examples are like the white rot fungi. Those are the fungi that break down like trees when they fall in the forest. Those mm-hmm. have a lot of the same enzymes that can help us break down polymers. And then once those polymers, and even the same way a log degrades in a forest, the bacteria then eat the smaller pieces that the fungi have broken down. So it's a team effort.
A team effort. Alex, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Dennis had emailed to say they've heard about microbes consuming oil spills in the Gulf of Mexico. Are these similar chemicals?
They are, yeah. Great question. So petroleum-based plastics are just oil that have been crystallized. And so and microbes, many different types of microbes, fungi, bacteria, archaea, are capable of depolymerizing oil. The challenge, and so the same metabolism in theory should work. The challenge is with plastics that since it's been formed into this hard, rigid, smooth structure, the enzymes that the oil degrading microbes use can't access the correct geometry to do the chemical reaction that they need to break it down. So that's the challenge of the plastic, is that you have to release the polymer to be free enough for the chemistry to happen. But yes, the oil degrading microbes could very easily act on plastics if we can get around the crystallinity.
John in Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. So last night I was watching a program. It was a response, an ex-executive's response from Amazon, who was working on or trying to get the company to pay attention and do a lot to destroy these plastics. And Amazon resisted, whatever. And the same, and they kind of went after Apple, too, because of all the disposable sort of turnover with these products that can't be recycled. And it was very interesting that Amazon did, after a while, and I don't know how long, but is making a concerted effort that in 10 years all of its products will be degradable. I just thought that I would share that, and it was a very interesting thing to watch, and I don't know which channel or which whatever, but I think someone did a look up and said Amazon's attempt at degradable plastics or something, might get that information.
Yeah, John, thanks for calling. Erica, are you familiar or aware of that work?
Not that specific one, but there are a number of larger companies that are starting to make these promises, or we've already seen reductions in packaging, or trying to think about using less plastic in the packaging. And I think all of this is part of the puzzle to the solution. So I'm encouraged to hear that other companies are making those promises and some of the bigger players in the field.
Well, I would think that maybe the kind of bioplastics that you're working on might find a use in something like, you know, what you get from Apple, for example.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the hope.
because it's not, you get the box, you open the box, all these little plastic pieces are in there, but they're centered in holders, kind of, so the brittleness factor wouldn't really make any difference, I wouldn't think, or maybe make minor difference.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of applications where the properties of existing bioplastics could already replace petroleum-based plastics. And, you know, sometimes people ask me, well, if I use a biodegradable plastic, does that mean my material isn't going to be stable? Like someone brought up cars or things like that. Cars, of course, get exposed to weather, and you don't want your car melting during the lifetime that you're driving it. But a lot of the reassurance is that to have the biodegradation happen, it has to still be a pretty specific situation where you have a high enough concentration of microorganisms that are in a still environment that's warm, for quite some time. So I don't think we're at risk of, you know, these, if we went to bioplastics, of them degrading on us. But yeah, there's many applications where we could drop in, replace bioplastics right now.
Erica Majumder, our guest today, Assistant Professor of Bacteriology at the UW-Madison's Department of Bacteriology. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here talking with Erica Majumder, an Assistant Professor of Bacteriology at the UW-Madison, talking about the research that she is doing relating, I guess you could call it landfill microbiology in a way.
Yeah, I sometimes say waste management microbiology.
So. Waste management, yeah, that's a good term for it. Stephen, Oneida County has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Erica and Larry. Great show. Learning a lot. Right now on the DNR's website, on their mining website, there's plans for a company to drill some holes in our national forest, the Shawamakon Forest. And in their plans that everybody can read, it says that they're going to attempt to bury these sulfuric acid fragments in the forest floor and then bury them or put a tarp over it and do some crazy abandonment stuff. But they say if they hit groundwater, they'll move this material and take it to a landfill. And just thinking from common sense standpoint, if you bring it's something like 75,000 pounds of acidic waste per project. If they take that to a landfill and dump that in there, wouldn't that burn a hole in the liner underneath the landfill and maybe harm this bacteria that you've been talking about? Or is there even a landfill in the state of Wisconsin that would allow high acidic rock fragments like that from a drilling project?
What do you think, Erica? We've strayed a little bit in some ways, but...
Yeah, I can attempt to partially address that question. It's a little bit out of my area, but there are hazardous waste landfills. So depending on how acidic that pH is, it may qualify for one of those, or they may need to do some pretreatment to the material before it gets deployed. But I can tell you from our work and from some of the stuff that my graduate student who leads the project, her name's Damayanti Rodriguez Ramos, she and I have been observing that there are a lot of microbes in the landfill that consume sulfate and sulfuric acid. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the natural sulfur metabolism processes that happens in any subsurface environment. It would depend on exactly what that material is and which landfill it's going to, but it would be very far away from the liner, usually, in terms of the physical nature of how a landfill is constructed.
Steve, thanks again. Bruce in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Larry, thanks for taking my call. I've been having lunch with you since the mid-1980s, on and off. Have you guys mentioned the incinerator at La Crosse, where XL Energy has been taking energy out of garbage for decades?
We haven't yet, but let's talk about it. Bruce, thanks for calling. Erica?
Yeah, thank you. We hadn't quite, no one asked about waste incineration yet, which thank you for bringing that up. That's one of the other sort of emerging waste management situations. And I've been a Wisconsinite for around 4 years now, so I'm still learning all of the processes here, but I've always been impressed with what I learn and really seen that Wisconsin has been on the cutting edge of waste management strategies for a long time. And productive uses for it towards energy, which is great. And yeah, that incinerator in La Crosse is one of the other examples. I believe, I don't know the specifications of it, so I won't try to comment, but in general, there's been globally for places where either landfilling is not an option or landfills are full or for other reasons that they've been moving towards these pyrolysis unit waste incinerators, which means they take all of the trash and they put it in and they burn it essentially, but at very high temperature and pressure. So it's not conventional burning. So you don't get the same type of toxics off gassing that you would from burning something. And they capture the heat and energy that's coming off of these pyrolysis units. And it's a different way of making renewable energy from trash. And so that's, I don't know a ton about that, but it is an emerging area that we've seen more and more municipalities going to globally as landfilling becomes less prominent.
And today, methane produced at the Dane County landfill is processed and converted, isn't it, into natural gas?
It is, yeah. We're one of the nation's leaders in that. So a few years ago, they installed a renewable natural gas plant at the Dane County landfill. And there are these wells that just look like big pipes, and they collect all the gas and they funnel it on site to the renewable natural gas plant. It cleans up the gas and pumps the methane into an interstate pipeline for natural gas. And so, it's revenue generating for the landfill. And also, farmers have the opportunity to bring the biogas that's produced from their manure piles. And so they can pump it just like a gas station in at the renewable natural gas plant as well. So that energy comes from the landfill and from our farming community, which is fantastic.
And, you know, that gas is used for vehicle fuel. Is it kind of a model of the larger bioeconomy that you envision could be built?
Definitely. Yeah, I think. I think these types of waste to energy conversion projects are great because, yeah, we're using this energy instead of just venting those gases into the air, which is not good for a lot of reasons. And yeah, we like to see this type of circularity where the carbon gets used for energy, it gets used for other products instead of just being released or buried.
So. Yeah. Paula in Fitchburg, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Paula.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about black utensils. For the last 2 days, I've gotten on email notices that the black plastic cooking utensils contain a fire retardant and they should be thrown away and replaced with stainless steel or maybe silicone. And I'm wondering what you know about that.
Well, do you know anything about that, Erica?
I think you might have seen the same article that my mom texted me the other day. I don't know specifically about that. I haven't read the article yet that my mom texted me, but I believe it has something to do with the presence of PFAS or these forever chemicals, the per and polyfluorinated alkyl substances. But beyond that, I can't say. But I think if the warning came from a manufacturer, things like that, then you would want to be. But yeah, I can't comment on that one specifically. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Okay. Paula, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. I want to turn a little bit to some of the other research that you're doing, because you're looking at microplastics microplastics may absorb contaminants such as disease-carrying pathogens. What's the work you're doing there?
So we started doing some work with plastic contamination in the environment also. We have been working in different Wisconsin lakes, and we had some ideas that as we've started to see an increase of harmful algal blooms in many, both in the Great Lakes and inland lakes here in Wisconsin. And we also have started to see an increase in, they still call them marine debris, even when it's in a freshwater lake. But
yeah.
Marine debris just means trash in lakes, which includes microplastics. And we know that the organisms that cause harmful algal blooms can form biofilms on substances. And so we were wondering what would happen if you have these increases of HABs and these increases of trash, if that would cause an interaction between the microbes and how that might change toxin production or toxin absorption, or if that would stimulate more bloom growth if they had these surfaces to grow on. So we've been doing a lot of experiments in the lab to try to answer those questions.
That's pretty cool. And you're also doing some work on whether the chickens sold at grocery stores have microplastics and salmonella in them.
Yeah, kind of. Not quite at the grocery store level, more on the more in like the animal production
side of things.
Yeah, more in the animal husbandry side. And so, yeah, we work with some in the collaborators in the meat science program for that. But some of the implications might be that there have been packaged meat recalls because of the presence of plastics. And so we were wondering if, similarly, like I was mentioning with the harmful algal blooms, salmonella can also form biofilms on things. So we were a little worried, or we had some research questions about if you had plastic contamination, could that further seed a pathogen like salmonella, which likes to form biofilms on surfaces? So
you're doing a lot of weird stuff. Well, you're even working in the Wyoming aquifer, for goodness sakes, to clean the uranium waste?
We work with some hydrogeologists at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and one of our field sites is an aquifer in Wyoming that has uranium contamination from a former mining site. So when he was asking about the sulfuric acid with mining, I've definitely experienced that before. The site in Wyoming we work at has a sulfuric acid plant on site. And so I'm very familiar with how that gets infiltrated into the groundwater. We have some hypotheses there about how the microbes are controlling like the mineral formations around the uranium, which has been preventing the remediation strategy from being achieved at that aquifer. And so,
who funds all your work?
Lots of different places. So we have some funding from NSF, or the National Science Foundation. We have funding from USDA on the bioplastic work, so the United States Department of Agriculture. We've had a little bit of funding from the Department of Energy on the plastic to bioplastic work, and then as well as several agencies within Wisconsin.
And I was just thinking about the UW-Madison. What are we, fifth in the U.S. in the amount of research dollars that we
are? Oh, yeah, that was just announced today. I think sixth, but we
sixth,
can say
it?
Fifth, but I think sixth officially.
Sixth is pretty good. The five above are pretty well-known places. But you and others here at the UW are doing some really outstanding research that has very practical application. As well, there are plenty of theoretical research going on too, but your work is very practical in the end, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it spans the fundamental research to try to answer these big picture questions. That's my interpretation of the Wisconsin idea, at least.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Erica, talking with you today. I hope we can do this again. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun. I'd be happy to come back.
Erica Majumder is an assistant professor of bacteriology at the UW-Madison's Department of Bacteriology. It's great to have her with us to talk about her work. And, of course, it's always great to have you listening in, and it's great to have the team that we have here for this program. Our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnott, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. And me, I'm Larry Mueller, and I thank you so much for listening, and I hope you stay with us because there's lots more in store here on WPR News.